George Eliot's Daniel Deronda stands as a revolutionary literary achievement that broke Victorian conventions by presenting a sympathetic Jewish protagonist at a time when anti-Semitism was commonplace in English society. Published in 1876 as Eliot's final novel, it became a cultural sensation that challenged readers to confront their prejudices. The book was reportedly a favorite of Sigmund Freud, who admired its psychological depth, and Oscar Wilde praised its moral complexity. Its exploration of Jewish identity and female agency was so groundbreaking that it influenced early Zionist thinking and became required reading in many women's studies programs. Even today, adaptations continue to appear, including the acclaimed 2002 BBC miniseries starring Hugh Dancy and Romola Garai, proving the enduring power of this complex Victorian masterpiece. The novel opens at the opulent Casino de Monte Carlo, where two strangers' lives intersect in a moment heavy with portent. Gwendolyn Harleth, a striking young woman in emerald green, commands attention at the roulette table, her face a mask of fierce concentration as she places increasingly desperate bets. Daniel Deronda observes her with keen interest, noting both her remarkable beauty and the underlying tension in her gambling, a recklessness that speaks of deeper turmoil. Their initial encounter, where he mysteriously returns her pawned necklace, accompanied by a cautionary note, establishes the novel's central dynamic of perception and moral influence. Gwendolyn's carefully constructed world shatters when she learns of her family's financial collapse through a letter that arrives during a morning ride. Forced to return to England from their continental travels, she confronts the harsh reality of genteel poverty, a fate she considers worse than death. Her true character emerges through daily interactions. She dismisses her sister's struggles with piano lessons as mere dullness, receives her mother's sacrifices with casual ingratitude, and expertly manipulates her uncle, Mr. Gascoigne, through calculated displays of deference to secure small privileges, including the maintenance of her beloved riding horse. The complexity of Gwendolyn's character lies in her fascinating contradictions. Eliot describes her as possessing an iridescence that allows opposing qualities to coexist. She can display genuine warmth while harboring cold calculation, show flashes of nobility despite fundamental selfishness. Though her formal education is limited to superficial accomplishments typical of Victorian ladies, she possesses an innate sense of capability that manifests as an almost masculine confidence in controlling her circumstances. Yet beneath her poised exterior lurks a profound existential dread, moments when she's gripped by terror of infinite space and cosmic insignificance, episodes she conceals behind a facade of aristocratic composure. As her financial circumstances deteriorate, Gwendolyn confronts the severely limited options available to Victorian women of her class. The prospect of becoming a governess, a position she views as barely above servitude, fills her with horror. Meanwhile, marriage looms as an increasingly inevitable solution, though she regards it as a dreary state of domestic fetters that would clip her wings. Through Gwendolyn's predicament, Eliot masterfully illustrates the impossible position of Victorian women, trapped between the competing demands of financial security and personal autonomy. Her story becomes a lens through which we examine how women navigated a society that offered them little control over their destinies while demanding they maintain an appearance of perfect contentment with their lot. When wealthy bachelor Henley Grandcourt begins courting Gwendolyn, she initially sees him as her salvation from financial ruin. His adorably quiet manner and lack of demonstrable passions appeal to her, as she believes this would give her freedom to follow her own desires. Yet their courtship is interrupted by a shocking revelation. Lydia Glasher, Grandcourt's former mistress, confronts Gwendolyn with the truth of their relationship and their four children. This moral crisis forces Gwendolyn to choose between her conscience and financial security. Initially, she flees to Europe, unable to face the implications of marrying Grandcourt after Lydia's revelation. But when her family's financial situation becomes desperate, she returns and accepts his proposal, convincing herself that everything is to be as I like. The marriage quickly reveals itself as a prison. Grand Court's character emerges in chilling detail, a man who derives satisfaction not from believing his wife loves him, but rather from mastering her reluctance, bringing her to kneel down like a horse under training. His cold cruelty manifests in subtle psychological manipulation rather than overt abuse. He enjoys watching Gwendolyn's spirit break under his control, finding pleasure in mastering someone who would have liked to master him. The toxic dynamic reaches its climax when Lydia sends Gwendolyn the family diamonds with a devastating letter. These diamonds, which were once given with ardent love to Lydia Glasher, she passes on to you. You have broken your word to her that you might possess what was hers. The curse that accompanies them, you will have your punishment. I desire it with all my soul, haunts Gwendolyn, who finds herself trapped in a marriage that has become her penance. This exploration of marital power dynamics was revolutionary for Victorian literature. Eliot unflinchingly portrays the legal and social structures that rendered wives essentially powerless, while examining how wealth and status could become instruments of psychological torture rather than sources of happiness. Running parallel to Gwendolyn's story is Daniel Deronda's search for identity and purpose. Raised as an English gentleman by Sir Hugo Mallinger, Deronda has always suspected he might be Sir Hugo's illegitimate son. His compassionate nature leads him to rescue Mira Lapidoth, a young Jewish woman attempting suicide after failing to find her lost family in London. Through Mira, Deronda encounters a world entirely foreign to Victorian genteel society, the Jewish community of London. He meets Mordecai Cohen, later revealed as Ezra, Myra's brother, a consumptive visionary who recognizes in Deronda the spiritual heir he has been waiting for. Despite Deronda's protestations that he isn't Jewish, Mordecai insists with prophetic certainty that Deronda's true heritage will eventually be revealed. Eliot's portrayal of Jewish characters was groundbreaking in English literature. Rather than relying on stereotypes, she presents Mordecai as a profound spiritual thinker and Mira as a woman of remarkable moral integrity. Their Judaism isn't merely exotic window dressing, but a living tradition with intellectual and spiritual depth. Mordecai's passionate vision of Jewish national revival anticipates Zionism by decades. The life of a people grows. It is knit together and yet expanded, in joy and sorrow, in thought and action. He argues against assimilation, asking what rationality truly means. What is the citizenship of him who walks among a people he has no hearty kindred and fellowship with, and has lost the sense of brotherhood with his own race? Through Deronda's growing engagement with Jewish thought and culture, Eliot challenges her Victorian readers to reconsider their prejudices. When Klezmer, a Jewish musician, is condescendingly approached at a party and told he has too much talent to be a mere musician, he erupts in defense of his profession. No man has too much talent to be a musician. Most men have too little. We are not ingenious puppets, sir. We help to rule the nations and make the age as much as any other public men. This dignified assertion of Jewish cultural contribution directly confronts the anti-Semitism prevalent in Victorian society, where Jews were often tolerated only to the extent they assimilated and abandoned their distinctive identity. The novel's pivotal turning point arrives when Deronda uncovers the truth of his parentage in a dramatic sequence set in Genoa. His mother, the Princess Helm Everstein, emerges as a complex figure who reveals not only that she is Jewish by birth, but also that she deliberately chose to sever all ties with her heritage. A celebrated opera singer who prioritized her artistic ambitions, she gave her infant son to Sir Hugo to raise as an English gentleman, making a calculated decision to distance him from his Jewish roots and the cultural obligations she herself had fled. Their meeting in Genoa transforms into an emotionally charged confrontation that embodies the novel's central tensions between personal freedom and inherited duty. The princess articulates her rejection of Judaism as an act of personal liberation with unflinching honesty. Every woman is supposed to have the same set of motives, or else to be a monster. I am not a monster, but I have not felt exactly what other women feel. She presents her choice as a rebellion against both religious tradition and maternal expectations, defending her pursuit of artistic freedom even at the cost of abandoning both her son and her ancestral heritage. Her character challenges Victorian assumptions about motherhood and religious duty, presenting a radical assertion of individual will. Deronda's response to this revelation demonstrates his moral evolution. While showing compassion for his mother's struggles, he firmly embraces the very identity she rejected, declaring, "The effects prepared by generations are likely to triumph over a contrivance which was meant to hinder them." This moment subverts traditional Victorian narrative expectations. Instead of discovering aristocratic English roots, the protagonist proudly claims his Jewish heritage and the moral responsibility it carries. The scene becomes a meditation on the tension between individual choice and inherited destiny. The revelation sets in motion a series of significant encounters. The princess provides Deronda with a letter to retrieve his grandfather's chest from Joses Kalonomos, a learned Jewish scholar in Mainz who had been his grandfather's close friend and confidant. Their subsequent meeting becomes another crucial moment of identity affirmation when Kalonomos pointedly asks if Deronda remains angry at being something more than an Englishman. Deronda's response reflects his complete transformation. "I shall call myself a Jew, and I hold that my first duty is to my own people." These words mark not just an acceptance of identity, but a profound commitment to action. This declaration represents Deronda's evolution from passive observer to active participant in historical destiny. His embrace of Jewish heritage provides the purpose he had been seeking throughout the novel, to work toward establishing a political existence for the Jewish people. This vision proves remarkably prescient, anticipating the Zionist movement that would emerge in the following decades. Through Deronda's transformation, Eliot explores how personal identity intersects with historical responsibility and suggests that true self-discovery often leads to broader social commitment. As Deronda discovers his Jewish identity, his relationship with Myra deepens into love, evolving from their initial encounter by the Thames, where he prevented her suicide. Their courtship unfolds against the backdrop of cultural difference and shared spiritual values, enriched by their mutual quest for understanding their heritage. While Deronda explores his newfound Jewish identity through scholarly pursuits and conversations with Mordecai, Myra's steadfast devotion to her faith provides him with a living example of Jewish tradition. Unlike the toxic power dynamics of Gwendolyn's marriage to Grandcourt, which is built on dominance and submission, Deronda and Myra's relationship flourishes through mutual respect, intellectual companionship, and genuine affection. Their path to marriage, however, is strewn with complex challenges. Myra's father, Lapidoth, returns, revealing himself as a manipulative gambler who once attempted to sell his daughter to a nobleman for financial gain. His presence creates a new impalpable partition between Deronda and Myra, as each misinterprets the other's increased reserve. Myra withdrawing in shame over her father's behavior, and Deronda hesitating to intrude upon her family crisis. The situation reaches its nadir when Lapidoth steals Deronda's cherished ring, a family heirloom from his mother. Myra returns to Deronda with her hands clasped tight and her lips pale, overwhelmed by humiliation at her father's betrayal. This crisis becomes the catalyst for Deronda's declaration of love, transforming their shared pain into a moment of profound connection. Myra, "Let me think that he is my father as well as yours, that we can have no sorrow, no disgrace, no joy apart." By asking her to be his wife, he offers not just personal happiness, but a shared identity and purpose, demonstrating how love can transcend familial shame and cultural barriers. Their courtship exemplifies Eliot's ideal of a relationship that preserves individual identity while creating deep emotional bonds. Their marriage, celebrated according to Jewish rite, symbolizes Deronda's complete embrace of his heritage and represents a triumph over Victorian society's prevalent anti-Semitism. The wedding ceremony becomes a microcosm of cultural harmony, bringing together disparate worlds. The traditional Jewish Cohen family attends, alongside the initially skeptical but now accepting Merricks, who have overcome their prejudices through their love for Mira. Hans Merrick's presence, despite his former romantic interest in Mira, further emphasizes the power of understanding and acceptance. This union represents Eliot's vision of cultural integration without assimilation, where difference is respected rather than erased, and where love serves as a bridge between communities while preserving their distinct identities. While Deronda finds his purpose through embracing his heritage, Gwendolyn undergoes a different but equally profound transformation. Her marriage to Grandcourt becomes increasingly unbearable as his controlling nature suffocates her spirit. Their relationship deteriorates into a psychological battle, where Grandcourt's subtle cruelties and manipulations slowly erode Gwendolyn's once confident demeanor. The culminating boating accident, where Grandcourt drowns, becomes a pivotal moment in her moral development. The ambiguity surrounding his death, whether Gwendolyn hesitated to save him out of momentary murderous impulse, becomes her private torment, haunting her thoughts and dreams. In her anguished confession to Deronda, Gwendolyn reveals the depths of her moral struggle. "I did kill him in my thoughts." This confession exposes not just the immediate guilt of the drowning incident, but the accumulated weight of her previous selfish choices and actions. Deronda offers compassionate wisdom, suggesting her momentary evil will didn't alter events, but remains significant within her own conscience. "Within ourselves, our evil will is momentous," he tells her, explaining that it works outward either through actions or in the self-abhorrence that stings us into better striving. This insight becomes a cornerstone of Gwendolyn's moral education, teaching her that intention and thought carry moral weight even when not translated into action. Gwendolyn's growing dependence on Deronda represents both her moral awakening and her continued inability to find strength within herself. She sees him as possessing an unknown standard that might offer her an inward safeguard against possible events which she dreaded as stored-up retribution. Her desperate plea, "What strength have I? Who else is there?" reveals her incomplete development and the fragility of her moral progress when it relies solely on external guidance. This dependency, while necessary for her initial growth, becomes a crutch that must eventually be discarded for true maturity. The novel's final test for Gwendolyn comes when Deronda reveals his Jewish heritage, his marriage to Mira, and his plans to travel east. This news forces her to confront a reality where she is not the center of the narrative. For the first time, she feels the pressure of a vast, mysterious movement beyond her control, dislodging her from supremacy in her own world. Her initial reaction is despair. "I said I should be forsaken. I have been a cruel woman, and I am forsaken." This moment of crisis forces her to confront her own insignificance in the larger scheme of things. Yet in this moment of greatest loss, Gwendolyn finds her own moral strength. After their tearful farewell, she tells her mother repeatedly, "I shall live. I mean to live," words that carry the weight of true determination rather than mere resignation. On Deronda's wedding day, he receives a letter from her promising to live as one of the best of women, a vow that represents not just personal ambition, but a genuine commitment to moral growth. This resolution marks Gwendolyn's true transformation, from a self-centered girl to a woman capable of facing life's challenges without external support, having internalized the moral lessons that Deronda helped her discover. The novel concludes with Mordecai's death and Deronda's departure for the East with Mira, a pivotal moment that weaves together personal destiny with historical significance. Mordecai's final words, "Death is coming to me as the divine kiss, which is both parting and reunion," encapsulates his mystical understanding of death not as an ending, but as a transformation. His passing represents more than just physical death. It symbolizes the transfer of spiritual inheritance to the next generation, embodied in Duranda's acceptance of his Jewish heritage and mission. Duranda and Myra's journey eastward carries multiple layers of meaning, both personal and political. Their departure represents the beginning of a new chapter in Jewish history, the practical work of creating a political existence for the Jewish people. This vision, articulated decades before Theodor Herzl's formal establishment of political Zionism in 1897, demonstrates Eliot's remarkable prescience about historical movements that would shape the 20th century. The novel anticipates not only the Zionist movement, but also the broader 19th century awakening of national consciousness among various peoples. Gwendolyn's story provides a striking counterpoint to the traditional Victorian narrative arc. She remains in England, facing the formidable challenge of rebuilding her life after Grandcourt's death and Duranda's departure. Her story deliberately subverts Victorian literary conventions, which typically rewarded virtuous heroines with marriage and punished transgressors with death or disgrace. Instead, Eliot offers a more nuanced ending, moral growth without romantic fulfillment, suggesting that personal development and self-awareness are more valuable than conventional happy endings. Gwendolyn's final state, chastened but not broken, alone but not defeated, represents a radical departure from contemporary literary norms. Through these interconnected narratives, Eliot explores questions that resonate powerfully in our own time. How do we balance individual desire with moral responsibility? What does it mean to inherit and carry forward a cultural tradition? Can people fundamentally change? And if so, what catalyzes such transformation? The novel examines these questions through multiple lenses, personal, cultural, and historical, while refusing to offer simple answers. Instead, it presents the complexity of human experience in all its contradictions and possibilities. Daniel Duranda achieves its lasting significance through this combination of psychological insight and moral complexity. The novel's exploration of identity, both personal and collective, its treatment of cultural inheritance and responsibility, and its vision of moral growth and transformation continue to challenge and inspire readers nearly 150 years after its publication. Its themes of cultural awakening, personal redemption, and the tension between individual fulfillment and collective responsibility remain startlingly relevant to contemporary discussions of identity, belonging, and moral obligation. Daniel Duranda ultimately presents a profound vision of human interconnection across boundaries of class, gender, and religion. Each character's actions ripple outward, affecting others in ways they cannot fully comprehend, creating an intricate web of relationships that demonstrates the fundamental interconnectedness of human experience. Duranda's seemingly simple act of kindness in rescuing Mira from the Thames proves transformative, leading not only to his discovery of Mordecai and his own Jewish heritage, but also catalyzing a series of events that reshape multiple lives. Similarly, Gwendolyn's moral compromises in marrying Grandcourt for security and status create far-reaching consequences that touch not only her own life, but those of her family and broader social circle. Through this intricate web of cause and effect, Eliot suggests that true morality lies not in rigid rules or social conventions, but in recognizing our fundamental responsibility to one another. As Duranda tells Gwendolyn in a pivotal moment, we must take hold of your sensibility and use it as if it were a faculty, transforming emotional responses into ethical action. This philosophy manifests throughout the novel in small acts of kindness and major life decisions alike, from Mrs. Merrick's welcoming of Mira into her home to Duranda's ultimate embrace of his Jewish heritage and mission. The novel's final image of Mordecai passing peacefully with Mira and Duranda at his side represents the culmination of Eliot's humanistic vision. Despite their vastly different backgrounds, an English gentleman, a Jewish visionary, and a displaced young woman, these characters have formed a family bound by shared values and mutual respect. Their connection transcends death itself, as Mordecai's spiritual and intellectual legacy lives on through Duranda's commitment to continue his work in service of the Jewish people and broader human understanding. The novel weaves together multiple storylines that illuminate different aspects of human connection: the relationship between personal choice and social responsibility, the tension between individual desire and moral duty, and the possibility of genuine understanding across cultural divides. Through characters like Hans Merrick, who must reconcile his artistic ambitions with his family obligations, and the Coens, who maintain their cultural identity while navigating Victorian society, Elliot explores the complexities of maintaining authenticity in a world of competing demands. In our own divided age, Daniel Duranda offers a powerful reminder that understanding across difference is not only possible, but necessary for human flourishing. Through her masterful storytelling, Elliot challenges readers to look beyond their own limited perspectives and recognize the humanity in those they might otherwise dismiss as foreign or incomprehensible. This moral imagination, the ability to enter sympathetically into lives unlike our own, remains her most enduring legacy, suggesting that true human connection requires both emotional intelligence and ethical commitment. The novel demonstrates how personal transformation often comes through encounters with difference, whether in the form of other cultures, beliefs, or ways of life.